This episode is sponsored in part by Lexus. Ever own something that inspired you to up your game? Imagine me, a newbie snowboarder, staring down the mountain that seemed to whisper, "Are you sure about this?" My snowboard, however, was like that one enthusiastic friend who believes you can do anything. Despite my beginner status, it convinced me I could nail those carves and shred that fresh powder like it's no big deal, and also I wear a helmet that doesn't hurt. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you're never going to go without. Fancy a view of the sky as you head up the mountain? The available dynamic sky panorama glass roof has got you covered. Soar from all that boarding action, the available front row massaging seats are a dream come true after days of hitting the slopes. And the available multi-terrain select? It's like having a secret weapon for conquering those tricky paths to your favorite ski spots. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX. Luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. This episode is sponsored in part by Fidelity. Go from saving to living. Learn more at fidelity.com/income planning. Welcome to the show. I'm Jordan Harbinger, and this is Skeptical Sunday, a special edition of the Jordan Harbinger Show where fact checker and comedian David C. Smalley and I break down a topic you may have never thought about, open things up, and debunk common misconceptions. Topics such as why the Olympics are kind of a sham, why expiration dates are nonsense, why tipping makes no sense, and a whole lot more. Normally on the Jordan Harbinger Show, we decode the stories, secrets, and skills of the world's most fascinating people and turn their wisdom into practical advice that you can use to impact your own life and those around you. We normally have long-form interviews and conversations with a variety of amazing folks, from spies to CEOs, athletes to authors, thinkers to performers. If you're new to the show or you want to tell your friends about the show, I suggest our episode starter packs. These are collections of our favorite episodes organized by topic that'll help new listeners get a taste of everything we do here on the show. Topics like persuasion, influence, disinformation and cyber warfare, abnormal psychology, crime and cults, and more. Just visit jordanharbinger.com/start or take a look in your Spotify app to get started. Today on this episode of Skeptical Sunday, chemtrails. What are these? These are the trails that flow behind airplanes. Why do we sometimes see them, other times we don't? Are they just clouds, or is it a chemical sprayed on us by the government for mind control? Now, we all know that clouds are just trapped moisture, or these frozen crystals suspended in the air, but of course it freaks people out when they see clouds being made right before their eyes. Conspiracies run wild, and the next thing you know, you have thousands of people believing we're being poisoned by our government. Comedian and skeptic David C. Smalley, of course, is here today to talk about chemtrails, or as I've been calling it all afternoon, chemtrails. Hey, David.
Hey, Jordan. Look, the government is definitely poisoning us, but it's because they let us eat Doritos.
All right. Okay. We need a legal disclaimer if you're going to do stuff like that.
Sorry. Red pointy nacho cheese tips. Got it. Exhausting working with an attorney.
Actually, I was just going to add Takis and Funyuns to the list because there's a lot more where that came from.
Okay, look, hey, we definitely need to do an episode on foods that are allowed in the States but should be banned like they are in other countries. So people need to write in if they want to hear that. I would love to ruin your snacks for you and do one on that.
You know, that's interesting. I bet you that Cheetos are not allowed in places where they have universal health care.
Or there are Cheetos that are just ugly and weird and taste like garbage, which is why they won't suck the chemicals out of them here. But I can't wait to do one. I want people to write in and tell Jordan, let's do one on banned foods, because I think it would be a blast.
I'm down. All right. So if people want it, we're going to give it to them. Chemtrails, the government conspiracy to douse Americans with weather-altering chemicals, or was it to control our minds? I forget.
No, I think that's what CNN is for. But yeah. Okay, look, let's start with some truth I found in this, okay? And this is going to shock some people because they tune in for skepticism and for facts, and sometimes you're not going to hear what you think you're going to hear or what you want to hear. So there's going to be some uncomfortable truths on this podcast. So when you look up and you see those trails behind planes, what you're seeing is a potentially dangerous chemical known as oxidane. In some circles, it's referred to as dihydrogen monoxide. It's been known to cause suffocation as well as accelerated corrosion. And there's this growing movement aiming at shutting it down. It's in our lakes. It's in the pipes under our homes. It's even in our toilets. You can buy bumper stickers and t-shirts that say ban dihydrogen monoxide to do your part. So we have a pretty short episode today. Yeah, that's what the trails are, oxidane. So be careful out there, kids. Don't look up with your mouth open.
Yeah, I've heard of that stuff, David, dihydrogen monoxide. Aren't there some other names for it as well?
Water. Jordan. It's literally water. When it gets cold, though, some people refer to it as ice.
Ah, but, I do have some in my kombucha right now. Speaking of things that rot your teeth and also are delicious.
Right. But Oxidane and dihydrogen monoxide are both names for water.
Never heard the Oxidane thing. You had me at Oxidane. The t-shirts are still fun, though, because they make the point that people will get all riled up over stuff without knowing any of the science behind the claims.
Yeah, a funny thing about that, I sent it to one of my friends who's like super conspiracy on Instagram, and I was like, there's literally Oxidane and dihydrogen monoxide coming out of these airplanes. And she was like, oh my God, that's effing terrifying. You finally believe something. Welcome to the club. And I'm just waiting for her to hear this episode and realize what it actually is.
Yeah.
Those claims lead us to the fun stuff that the conspiracy theorists say, which I would love to dive into. So I'm fortunate that I've been doing my podcast, my Skeptic Bay show, for about 12 years. And I stay pretty respectful over there.
You do. It drives me nuts. But okay.
As opposed to over here where I'm very disrespectful. But no, so it's allowed me to create a lot of friends over there.
In Camp Kook, you mean?
Yeah. And I've developed relationships with those people, and they have incredibly crazy conspiracies, and I love them for it. But what that means is I get my own, like, personal access to, like, a private stash of crazy humans I can just reach out to and ask them questions about what they believe. And yes, they know I call them my crazy humans, and they often tell me I'm going to be Satan's bitch in hell, and we have a laugh, and Yikes. It's those kinds of relationship, you know?
That is what your show is about, so
yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so the main argument we hear from the conspiracy theorists is that we clearly see chemicals being sprayed from airplanes, and when we test the soil, we find aluminum. And this is backed up by proof that giant science conferences often talk about geoengineering or ways to control the weather and alter the climate. I know I started this episode off joking, shocker, I'm a comedian, but that part is actually true. Scientists are geoengineering our weather to help combat climate change, and we should be. Our Earth is heating at a rapid rate. And by the way, there are certain politicians who won't get on board with helping with climate change. So we need scientists to kind of step up and address it and push the science and do something innovative to help combat climate change. And unfortunately, some conspiracy theorists will go to a science convention like that, and they'll take videos of scientists talking freely and openly about different ideas and possible ways to deal with this. And then they play, you know, these 30-second clips out of context and out of order in a YouTube video and stir up conspiracies about what's really going on, or, you know, without really understanding the science behind the presentations.
We did an episode of the show a long time ago, episode 348, called Hacking Planet Earth, and it's about geoengineering. And I did get email after that from people that were like, love outside of the box thinking, some of these ideas are really dumb because of all these knock-on effects. So I get that, but none of it was really like, no, they're going to secretly use these chemicals to control our minds. I mean, you're right. At these conventions, scientists speak openly and freely because they're not married to their ideas. They're used to brainstorming and experimentation and throwing stuff at a wall and seeing what sticks. And they're not afraid to toss out an idea that they haven't necessarily thought all the way through or worked all the kinks out and have it get shot down or never go anywhere. Like, that's normal. That's science.
No, that's a great point. And you're exactly right. They don't think about being filmed in a gotcha moment. They're just talking about ideas and climate change, and then they inadvertently get blasted in a conspiracy video.
Okay, so you've said the trails are just water. I've done some research into this as well. I think I know what you mean, but break down what we are actually looking at, because I'll be honest, my son Jaden the other day was like, what is that? And I was like, oh, it's an airplane. He's like, no, what is that? And he's pointing to the trail, and I was like, it's a cloud. And he's like, that's a cloud. He points at a round, fluffy thing, and I'm like, oh, it's so hard to explain, especially to a 2.5-year-old with limited vocabulary. But I also didn't really know the answer.
You're supposed to go, it's Oxidane, and run, you know, just to terrify him and traumatize him as early as you can.
We have to go inside and eat dinner now.
Okay, so it's the same principle as you seeing your breath on a cold day. So the air is cold, your breath is hot, and a steam is created that you can see. It's really that simple. It's like your morning coffee being so much hotter than the air in your home, so you see a little steam rising, right? Mm. We see that pattern. So we know that hot stuff forced with cold stuff makes the air around it visible. It's pretty much that simple.
Yeah, okay, so a car exhaust pipe on a cold day, you get a little steam rising, right? Sometimes a little water dripping off.
Exactly. Now, take that same concept and imagine that the exhaust is 500 degrees Fahrenheit, and it's in atmospheric air that's at 40,000 feet, that's anywhere from minus 40 to minus 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Wow. So you have extreme cold plus extreme hot plus humidity equals clouds. When you told your son that was clouds being made by the airplane, you were exactly right. It is literally a cloud that's being made in the moment.
So that's cold, humid air up there.
Yeah. So the plane is just increasing the humidity in an already humid environment. Because when a plane comes passing through, it's hot and it's heating up the moisture in the air, which is going to be humid.
The engine heats the air and pushes it into a more cold air with force. Yeah.
Okay. Right. So cold moisture is sucked into the giant jet engines at high pressure. And then that pressure naturally heats the air whenever you're condensing it. Hot air then blows through the jet engine and out the exhaust into the freezing cold atmosphere, which creates those frozen crystals that are essentially cirrus clouds.
Got it. So it's just extreme condensation done by a powerful machine.
Right. And that's where they get the name contrails. That's literally what they're called. They're contrails. It stands for condensation trails. It's just a lot of condensation. And in those conspiracy videos, they'll play a real clip from a real scientist, say something like, "We do things in the stratosphere all the time." And as he says that, they show a video clip of a contrail being formed by an airplane. And I mean, it's just emotional manipulation at the hands of crafty video editing, because as he's talking, you believe he's talking about what you're looking at on the screen. And in fact, they have these basic scientific variables that allow us to easily explain what we actually see. And it has nothing to do with experiments in the stratosphere or atmosphere, but the video producer wants to manipulate you, so that's the tactic. You know, think they're doing some sort of experiment up there on your soil or on the weather.
Since contrails are based on all these variables, there's probably a way to mathematically predict it, or at least estimate where they're going to show up depending on which jet is flying through certain parts of airspace and how high and all that stuff, right? It's got to be a thing.
Yeah, yes. So when 9/11 happened and all the planes were grounded for a while, it was discovered that contrails actually have a pretty dramatic effect on the temperature of the Earth. So NASA has a contrails forecasting website predicting where they will be. And you can even do it yourself with a little math and figuring out where the relative humidity will be along with general flight paths. So for anyone saying, "Oh, of course NASA knows where the chemicals are going to be sprayed," you can just do a little math and you can predict which parts of the sky they're going to show up in. And the reason NASA cares and has this forecasting website is because of global warming.
So how do contrails affect climate? They're small. I mean, I know there's a lot of them, but they're just like these thin lines in the air.
Right. So at any given time, there's about 8,000 airplanes in the sky. It'll range, some low numbers say 6,000 to 7,000. Some are up as high as, you know, 18,000 to 19,000. A good solid average, a conservative estimate, is about 8,000 planes in the sky at any moment.
Globally.
Globally, yeah. And these contrails, or these clouds produced by the planes, are heating up the Earth by blocking outgoing radiation that's trying to leave our planet at night. And they actually block both ways. So during the daytime, planes actually help cool the Earth because it's blocking incoming radiation.
Yeah, like a cloud. It's blocking the sun.
Exactly, right. Exactly. And then at night, those same ones are like a blanket, right? Mm. As the blanket is laying over the Earth, the heat is trying to leave and radiate out into the atmosphere, and the contrails sort of hold it in certain pockets. So that's why NASA studies and tracks the contrails. The idea is that if we only fly during the day, the contrails will block a portion of incoming radiation. And then if we stopped flight, say around 4 p.m. or 6 p.m., and we didn't fly anymore during the night, the Earth would actually begin to cool a little because the heat can escape better at night without extra clouds to block it. But who's going to actually shut down every flight from 4 p.m. to 3 a.m.?
Yeah, I mean, that's not a horrible idea in my totally uneducated, haven't thought this through at all opinion. But when scientists talk about geoengineering, aren't they, they're mostly talking about manipulating that concept to the benefit of the planet.
Right. So that's one of the things conspiracy theorists latch onto is the admission from scientists that we are in fact focusing on geoengineering. What they actually mean when they say it is that now that we can somewhat accurately predict the location of contrails, we could alter flight paths to intentionally create contrails during the day and then try our best to avoid making contrails at night by flying through low moisture paths to allow more radiation to escape at night and then cool the planet. So that would technically be geoengineering. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So a flight may take longer, cost a little more fuel, but the benefit in theory in some cases would outweigh the cost, and they could of course calculate all that in advance.
Absolutely. And assuming we could get corporations to give a damn about the planet, which would probably have to come in the form of a tax deduction, but yeah, it's fine. Another form of geoengineering is cloud seeding, where we kind of help it rain more than it would. But we can get into that later. I know it's going to come back in some of the challenges posed by conspiracy theories, so I'll address that in a moment.
And now for some real mind control, namely, a word from our sponsor. This episode is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. As the new year rolls in, we're bombarded with messages about transforming ourselves, but how about a different approach for 2024? Let's celebrate what's already great about us. So let's talk therapy. It's a powerful tool, not just for overcoming challenges, but for recognizing your strengths and making meaningful changes. Therapy teaches you to cope positively and set sound boundaries. It's for everyone who wants to sharpen their mental well-being. So if you've been thinking about therapy, but keep giving yourself excuses not to start, here's a little nudge to give BetterHelp a try. It's completely online, tailored to your schedule. You fill out a questionnaire, get paired with a licensed therapist, and remember, you can switch therapists anytime, no extra charge.
Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/Jordan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Jordan.
Answers. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Your support of our advertisers keeps us going. All those deals and discounts are always on one page. JordanHarbinger.com/deals is where you can find it. And you can search for the sponsors of any show using the search box on the website as well. Please consider supporting those who support us. Now for the rest of Skeptical Sunday. I've seen some of these folks show videos of meteorologists claiming that the military is dropping aluminum from planes and that's proof of chemtrails, and they're even showing it on the radar in the local TV station. You know, what's going on with that?
Yeah, so just with any conspiracy, there's always some element of truth, and there have been a few different meteorologists kind of pop up in the news talking about this, and there's one clip, though, that's used the most often. It's from 2010, and there's a weatherman who points at what looks like rain on his, like, weather wall. And he goes, "That's not rain, folks. I assure you, military aircraft is flying through the region and dropping chaff." And then he makes a point about being in the Marines and says he knows all about it. And then he just moves on. And people freaked out about him, you know, about what he said. That got everyone up in arms. And now that clip from 2010 gets used in almost every chemtrail video. And it's true. It was real. What he's talking about really happened. But chaff is essentially glass silicate fibers that's coated with aluminum that create a radar reflective cloud that disrupts missile technology. It's essentially anti-aircraft missiles. Cool. So if people are trying to shoot down our aircraft, this is anti those missiles. And sometimes they do military tests where they do drop these things and they run tests to make sure they work properly. But there's no evidence suggesting that they're, you know, taping that stuff to the bottom of Spirit Airlines to douse Albuquerque with magic juice.
Yeah, and if that were the case, we'd see it on radar maps all the time, on every weather report covering the country.
Right.
Another thing they say is that you can watch a plane leave chemtrails and then turn them off. And then they turn them back on a few hundred meters away, which, according to them, shouldn't happen if it's just hot air combining with cold air.
By the way, you made a great point about that. If that this was happening, it would be showing, like, you wouldn't even be able to see rain on a map, right? Every time the weather map came on, it would be flooded with clouds everywhere and it would constantly look like rain. It's just not feasible. But the people who say what you just said about, you know,
turning them on and off shouldn't
be able to stop and start, then they just don't understand atmospheric moisture, which is just all over the place. And the existence of clouds is proof of how random moisture is on any given day. I mean, if you see clouds, there is heavier moisture there than where you don't see clouds. So just like you're driving along and, you know, you hit a few bumps here and there in the road, when you're flying at 40,000 feet, you'll have patches of moisture and then patches of dry air. And that's essentially what's happening.
So the moisture is essentially already there and the heat from the plane is just making it visible because it's blending. It's like how Jell-O is see-through and then you stick a knife in it and now there's that little ripple in it and now it's not completely transparent anymore or it's not. Yeah,
right.
That's kind of what I'm
You're exactly right.
Of.
So one scientist explained it by saying that the plane is like one of those magic markers that looks invisible, but it reveals the picture that was already there. So if you see a contrail, there was already moisture there. Some refer to it as like an invisible cloud. The moisture was already there. And then when the trail stops, the cold air was drier in that section of the atmosphere. And when it starts back up, there's more moisture there again. It's that simple.
Are these the only moving parts here that determine where the trails will be? It's just moisture, hot air, et cetera?
Yeah, mostly. But it also depends on the size of the plane, the type of engine. You know, some engines don't heat as fast or as hot as others. The composition of the exhaust could be different based on the manufacturer. Some could contain more carbon dioxide or sulfur or nitrogen or unburned fuel or just microscopic metal bits that are ground up inside the engine or water vapor, things that come from a giant jet engine. They all play a role.
So when one trail stays in the sky longer, what does that mean?
It just means it's more humid in that altitude.
And the ones that all spread out kind of, you know what I'm talking about? They get wider. Yeah.
Yeah. That one freaks people out. They think that that's like proof that it's all coming down. All that means is that it was very humid in that area. If it was a high moisture area that increased the humidity when a jet came blasting through, and then because it was humid, a lot more crystals formed in that area and it froze, making a cirrus cloud. And then the humidity held it in the air while the wind blew it around for about an hour, spreading out the particles. So what you're seeing is one that's been there a long time, was really solid, really humid, and then the wind spread it out.
Some conspiracy websites, they tackle the whole size of the plane issue, saying they've seen small planes create huge clouds of chemtrails, and they got it on tape. So if those engines aren't big and they're not that hot to create contrails, like, what's going on there?
Yeah, I knew we'd get here. This is a really common claim from conspiracy theorists. And so this is what brings me back to the cloud seeding that I teased a moment ago. Areas that don't get a lot of rain, or they need more rain in general, can participate in what's called cloud seeding. It's S-E-E-D, like you're putting a seed in the ground, which is when a plane has these special fittings of flares on them. And inside those, they have silver iodide inside there, which is a condensation nuclei that helps collect moisture, which basically just helps the cloud condense and form thicker clouds than it would have, and then that'll produce 15 to 30% more rain than that cloud would have done without the cloud seeding.
So they're like making clouds at will, essentially.
They can make clouds from scratch, but usually with giant machines. These planes are typically flying into storms of existing clouds. It's better to just start with something that's already there and kind of make it condense more, right?
Yeah.
So they fly into storms like that because as high pressure systems move in, these cloud seeders, they wait for the signal from the meteorologist, and then the meteorologist will tell them, you know, where to go, how much to do, and they just go up and release this stuff into clouds, and it makes them extra thick.
Yeah, and that sounds a lot like chemtrails, and geoengineering can really confirm some suspicions for some people who want chemtrails to be true.
Yeah, and it's important to point out that you can see a small plane, because they always use small planes to do the cloud seeding. They go up and literally squirt stuff out of their wings. And when people talk about chemtrails, that's what it looks like. So there is, you could go on YouTube and look up cloud seeding, and it would look exactly how you expect it to look from quote unquote chemtrails. But using a jet to do it would be incredibly expensive and ridiculously not worth the fuel cost. So they used the little planes that, like, you know, fertilize areas and things like these little stunt looking planes, small planes to do it. It at least proves in theory that it could work if the government wanted to do that, but it doesn't suggest that it would be an effective way to poison a population or commit genocide, nor does it prove any sort of motive or that anyone has even actually really started to try to poison us. All we know is that cloud seeding that takes place is very good for the people in that area because it's helping with rain and crops, and it helps dry, arid climates that need rain for their communities.
In one documentary, there was a big deal made of elevated aluminum. I think it was like Mount Shasta in California here, showing the soil samples had like 61 times the recommended maximum amount of aluminum. And they claim that's because of chemtrails. Have we explained that?
Yeah. So I haven't found anyone else explaining it. I got to the bottom of this issue because that was probably... That's the big thing that connects a lot of conspiracy theorists, is that the government's trying to put terrible things in your body. So whether it's, you know, food splicing or the vaccine or chemtrails or whatever it is,
fluoride in the water.
Yeah, fluoride in the water. The same idea. It's like they're trying to poison us all the time for population control. And I watched that documentary. I know what you're talking about. And I watched it to address this issue. And that claim made the rounds for a while in multiple different other videos as well, not just that one you're talking about. So I did have to do some digging, but the deal is those reports were legit. There were definitely elevated levels of aluminum in that Mount Shasta area in California. But what they conveniently leave out of the film is that if you look at the report when they briefly show the paper, if you like pause it and focus on it, it says the sample was taken July 9th, 2008. Well, you can go online and you can look at reports from that area around that date and see that leading up to that, there were hundreds of wildfires. There were extremely high winds. There was drought. The pH levels of the soil were all over the place, and nature was in absolute crisis. The Guardian cites a report from 2021 operated by the California Air Resources Board, which is known as CARB, showing that smoke from wildfires can significantly increase the amount of hazardous toxic metals present in the air, and it can travel for miles. It goes on to say levels increased up to 50 times above the normal average, and these metal particles can travel over 150 miles away from the fire.
And there were fires in that Mount Shasta area just before the tests were taken.
Yeah, literally for weeks leading up to it, thousands of acres burned within days of the samples being taken. I have an article here from June 29th talking about the hundreds of wildfires in the Mount Shasta area.
Right, and the samples were taken on July 9th, yeah.
Right, 10 days from the article. There's even a point in the documentary where this guy points to like this hazy sky off in the distance, and he's like, It's so cloudy as if there's some sort of wildfire, but that's chemtrails, man. And there were fires in that area for months at that time. So, of course, when the pH levels are off balance, the aluminum and acidity in the soil rises. And multiple reports show that when your soil is acidic, the aluminum becomes soluble. It rises and it becomes detectable. And plants die, soil becomes more toxic. And if you test the soil, aluminum will spike on those tests. But the water department tested the water repeatedly in the Mount Shasta area. I confirmed it on their websites. No additional aluminum or toxic metals had made it into the actual water supply. So it's so easy to confirm that the elevated levels of toxicity from aluminum must have come from the wildfires.
Isn't aluminum sort of, they cite stuff about aluminum causing Alzheimer's and things like that.
Yeah, there's a lady in that same documentary that just blatantly says that she comes out and says patients with Alzheimer's have elevated aluminum levels in the brain. And then she talks about her concerns for a family member who suffered with it. And then she, of course, blames chemtrails for it. There's no evidence that aluminum is increased in the brains of Alzheimer's patients. I grabbed this from ALZ.org, which is the Alzheimer's Association website, where they answer basic sort of FAQ about the disease. And here's the quote from ALZ.org. It says, during the 60s and 70s, aluminum emerged as a possible suspect in Alzheimer's. This suspicion led to concern about exposure to aluminum through everyday sources, such as pots and pans and beverage cans and antacids and antiperspirants. But since then, studies have failed to confirm any role for aluminum in causing Alzheimer's.
And the claims about the chemicals killing the trees, what about that?
Yeah, they actually go knock on the trees and pull parts off, and they say that it's silver and it's metallic and it's causing the trees to die. If you watch that same documentary we're talking about, and I don't want to promote them, I don't want to send people that direction.
Yeah.
But if you already know what documentary we're talking about, there's a moment where he shows very briefly a screenshot of an article. I think the headline says, trees dying in the West at record rates. The screenshot's only up there for maybe 3 seconds, 4 seconds. If you can pause it, specifically I pause it at 43 minutes and 39 seconds, you can actually read the top paragraph of the article. And if you just read that paragraph, which you have to pause to do, it says that this is linked to the rising regional temperatures, destructive forces of early snowmelt, drought, forest fires, and deadly insect infestations brought on by global warming in the article.
So not only is the evidence right in front of their faces, they even put it on screen and just like in classic sort of conspiracy fashion, just didn't bother reading it.
Apparently.
Yeah. Look, we could go step by step and debunk each claim, but this episode's going to be 7 hours long if we do that. I mean, there's so many baseless claims built in pseudoscience. Most of it is just nonsense.
Yeah. Look, if the government wanted to sneak some shit into your body, there are much more effective ways to do it than dropping chemicals all over you.
And over land that no one's using for anything.
Right.
Miles of it.
They literally control the water supply you shower in. Inspectors go to factories where food is processed. They could sprinkle that shit in your barbecue sauce and we'd all have it by the weekend.
Yeah.
It could be in ketchup. It could be in your precious bottled water or stuffed into hot dogs and you'd just be like, without a clue in the world. So just stop with the chemtrails. It makes no sense.
And geoengineering is a thing, but nobody's poisoning you. Well, actually, I mean, sorry, Doritos. Other than Doritos and all those other folks, no one's poisoning you, at least not from the sky. But hashtag ban dihydrogen monoxide.
Yeah. Hey, go watch my TikToks and stay skeptical, my friends.
Thank you, David. If you're looking for another episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show to sink your teeth into, here's a trailer for another episode with retired astronaut Chris Hadfield.
I watched the first two people walk on the moon, and I thought, wow, I'm going to grow up to be something. Why don't I grow up to be that? That's the coolest thing ever. It is purely the direct result of all of those little minute-by-minute decisions that I made since starting when I was a kid, just turning 10. When I got the telephone call asking if I would like to be an astronaut, I was at the top of my profession. I was the top test pilot in the U.S. Navy as a Canadian. And then to be selected as an astronaut, suddenly I'm a guy who knows nothing. I sit in my office and I'm like, I'm a complete imposter. I have zero skills right now. Whenever anybody has offered to teach me something for free, I've always taken them up on it. How are you getting ready for the major events in your life, the things that matter to you, the things that have consequence? Are you just sort of waving your hands and go, oh, probably turn out okay? Or are you actually using the time available to get ready for it? Maybe it will turn out okay. But if the stakes are high, to me, that's just not a gamble I willingly take. If at some point in life you think you know everything you need to know, then you're just in the process of dying. What astronauts do for a living is visualize failure, figuring out the next thing that's going to kill you, and then practice it over and over and over again until we can beat that thing. We know how to deal with it. Then you do a much better job and a more calm and comfortable way of doing it as well. You don't miss it. You're not overwhelmed by it. It's something you can do while thinking of something else. You notice how beautiful it is, how magnificent it is, how much fun it is. You're not just completely overwhelmed by the demands of the moment.
For more on how Commander Chris Hadfield managed to stay focused on his dream starting at age 9 to become the first Canadian to walk in space, check out episode 408 of The Jordan Harbinger Show. Well, I'm glad to hear that we're not being poisoned by the government, at least not from the sky, probably in myriad other ways. But we'll leave that for other editions of Skeptical Sunday. Thanks, David. A link to the show notes for the episode can be found at jordanharbinger.com. Transcripts in the show notes. I'm at Jordan Harbinger on both Twitter and Instagram, or just hit me on LinkedIn. You can find David Smalley at David C. Smalley on all social media platforms and at davidcsmalley.com, or better yet, on his podcast, The David C. Smalley Show. Links to all that in the show notes as well. This show is created in association with Podcast One. My team is Jen Harbinger, Jace Sanderson, Robert Fogarty, Ian Baird, Emilio Campo, Josh Ballard, and Gabriel Mizrahi. Our advice and opinions are our own. I'm a lawyer, but I'm not your lawyer, so do your own research before implementing anything you hear on the show. And remember, we rise by lifting others. Share the show with those you love. If you found this episode useful, please share it with somebody else who needs to hear it. You know, like somebody who thinks the trails from airplanes are caused by the government and are poisoning us. In the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so you can live what you listen. And we'll see you next time. And thanks again to our sponsor, McDonald's. Share your crew story at McDonald's.com.